Welcome to Openly Gamer Theater's production of The Dragon Variation, a Shadowrun roleplay drama.
This is Shannon. I'm playing Nightfall.
This is Dan, and I'm playing Fastback.
This is Mike. I will be playing Frenzy.
This is Brandon. I'm playing Talisman.
This is Brandy. I'm playing Poison Lily.
This is Jason, and I'm playing Astral Glide.
I'm Sean, and I'm playing Blockade.
Be warned, the following content may not be suitable for all audiences.
Inevitably, in every group, there's that one person who seems to attract trouble. For this group, that was Tailgunner. Thomas Hunter was a fuck-up and a low-life junkie. I'd known Glide for a few years by the time he'd introduced me to his baby brother. God, he had to have been 14, 15, and I could tell he was a turd. Man, did he pull his brother's strings. To understand the dynamic between the Hunter brothers, you need to know about their past and understand the concept of Survivor's Guilt. The Hunter household was an abusive one. They never talked about it, and really, it doesn't matter. In the end, it's all the same. Anyway, they became kids of the system. Because of his magical aptitude, Marcus was taken to a prestigious corporate prep academy, while his brothers were subjected to the horrors of the UCAS foster system. When Glide was 16, after having been kicked out of countless places, he broke Tommy out of a particularly bad situation and took to the streets. It wasn't long after that, his innate abilities caught the eye of a very singular individual, Shifu Songshi. The esteemed master accepted Matt as a student, but demanded that he leave his brother behind. Tommy returned to the system. What that kid endured, with no one to protect him, the guilt of that ate at Matt and Marcus for years, consumed them. Later, Tommy would use that to manipulate his brothers over and over again, including convincing them into taking a job, one that he knew his brothers and their friends wouldn't likely walk away from.
Glide stood in stunned silence, staring at the grinning face of the orc girl, one who by all rights should have been a corpse 10 years in her grave. The sour burn of bile rose in his throat as he watched the fine muscles of her face, her expression, her manner. It was Tommy. He felt the room spin as he reeled, and would have hit the floor had it not been for Talisman. Marcus steadied him with a firm grip on his shoulder. Glide tightly closed his eyes, willing away the tears that were threatening to burst free. And when he opened them, Talisman met his gaze. He found strength in them, resolve.
Don't just stand there sweating like a couple of one-pump chumps. Give your baby brother a hug.
Talisman looked over Glide's shoulder at Tommy, his lips curled in disgust.
I don't know what that thing is, but get it out of here.
I'm going to astrally perceive this thing.
It feels like Tommy, but first of all, he's radiating much more magic than he ever did before because he never radiated any magic before.
This is fucked up, man. There's no way you're my brother.
Oh, man. Clyde, your face. That look on your face.
Your face, dude.
Hey, how much money do you owe me, Tommy?
Bitch, don't make me act the motherfucking fool. I don't owe you shit.
It's Tommy.
No. I'm not dealing with this.
I don't like it. It's all very creepy.
Who here can explain what's going on? And I look at Aaron and Amaniel. Care to explain?
Yeah.
A twinkle in Amaniel's eyes betrayed her amusement. She raised her chin and met Glide's eyes with a detached chill.
In his final report, before his capture, my brother stated that a section of my mother's vault, one previously sealed, was now open. It was in this section that he found your brother, in a vat of black fluid.
The black fluid that was coming out of him?
Exactly.
Okay, but so why is he a 12-year-old orc girl that's not aged in 10 years?
Emmanuel turned her eyes to Aaron, who cleared his throat.
We aren't completely sure. We think it has to do with the substance, the black fluid.
How did Hestovy get this black goo?
You misunderstand. My mother is not responsible for this.
It appears that someone else co-opted the area, unbeknownst to Hestovy.
Who?
Mainly the Sabanjur, a group comprised of former members of the Clutch, my mother's otaku, and ex-Pakis.
Ex-Paxis is gone. They're disassembled.
True. Those that escaped persecution joined up with the remnants of the Clutch and formed the Sabanjur.
Nightfall crossed her arms and leaned against the wall, a hardness growing in her eyes as Aaron spoke.
They are a death cult, intent on releasing horrors from the deep metaplanes into our world. You've encountered one of these horrors already during the mission to recover Emmanuel.
You mean the thing in the van?
Yes. If the Andominal is activated, opening all of the gates simultaneously, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions, will come through into our reality.
That's not good.
That's what happens when the uninitiated mess with the metaplanes.
Emmanuel smiled slightly as she placed her hand on Aaron's shoulder, stepping around him so she could slowly walk around the conference room.
Fortunately, my brother is in place and can aid you in your mission.
Harlequin is inside right now.
Did he get captured on purpose?
He did. Once the scope of this was fully realized, we knew he would be more useful inside, gathering as much information as he could until Emmanuel's agents, you, arrived.
What's our timeline?
We know that the opening of the Andominal is imminent, so we have little time to waste.
A weighty silence descended on the room. All the while, Talisman's stare bore into the thing, claiming to be Tommy. It was clear that he couldn't contain himself any longer as he leaned forward.
Tommy, what have you been doing for a decade?
Most of it? Floating in a vat of black goo? There was a power failure or malfunction of some sort. I got out.
Were you in this body, or were you in your old one?
When I woke up, sprawled out on the floor of that vault, I look like this.
I'm keeping my distance. This whole thing makes me uncomfortable.
I wandered the underground complex, saw the gate thing you're looking for, and then was able to find my way out. Luckily for you...
Everyone jumped when their AR desktops went active, as data began pouring across their views.
I tagged my path, mapped the whole thing.
You escaped from the compound and got out on your own.
You're goddamn right I did. And if you thought I had whiz skills before, man, that ain't nothing compared to the shit I can do now.
I can't deal with this right now. I don't know, I might go outside.
The orc girl watched as Glide excused himself, slamming the back door in his haste. A faint look of bemusement on its face as it shrugged.
The fuck is his deal?
Well, I think he's a racist. I think he hates orcs.
Look at yourself. What do you mean, what's his deal?
Yeah, this is a...
This is still Tommy, you guys. Weird.
I can't help what I look like.
Yeah, that doesn't make it less weird.
It's the same to me.
Marcus, you know it's me. He knows it's me.
So this isn't weird for you? You've been in a vat of black goo for 10 years?
Sure, man, it's strange. Do I wish I was in my old body? Sure, but this is the only way. I know it's a shock, but I had no choice.
Just give him some time.
Do you detox in those 10 years?
Sort of.
What sort of mean?
Did you replace it with something?
I suppose.
What is it?
Let's just say I found enlightenment. The truest meaning of self.
The creature smiled at the perplexed look on everyone's faces.
Okay, I come back in, and I just remembered I don't smoke. This is going to take me a while. I know it's you. I can see that it's you. I can see your aura. I mean, it's kind of fucked up. You didn't really have a magical aura before, but I can tell it's you. And this is, out of everybody here, We should be able to handle this, but I can't handle this.
You know what I can handle? $1 million payout. So let's do the job.
He's right.
Yeah, I don't care who you are. Let's do this job.
Amaniel nodded as all eyes turned back to where she and Aaron were quietly standing.
The logistics of how you get there and inside are up to you.
Well, that's interesting because there's no way to get in except from up on high.
Well, that's how we're going to have to do it, right?
We can't go in on foot. We can't go in on vehicles. It's too well defended.
Not in a group. I mean, if there was one or two of us, that would make sense. But
what about like a maintenance crew or something like that?
That never works.
There's already, I wouldn't say it never works. Lots of construction workers on site. We could easily blend in with a construction crew. And that would also give us an excuse to carry in some equipment, too.
Amani, do you have access to suborbital?
We do.
We drop in. It's the only way to do it.
Like a halo drop?
Yes. You have your wings, don't you, Block?
A long time ago.
You don't forget how to fall.
Oh, come on. Halo? Really? A night halo drop from a suborbital? Now, Blockade, that I could buy. He was SFODD. For those who don't know what that is, it spells badass motherfucker. But Glide? And Nightfall? For God's sakes, give me a break.
A topographical map of Mount Shasta popped onto their desktops. A glowing circle appeared as Fastback spoke, highlighting an area of the mountain.
There's a clearing on the northeast corner that should be our target. That's the only place that is not guarded.
On the screen, you see a red dot right next to that clearing, and the stats of it come up, and it says that it is a hunting cabin.
Block, you're going to have to leave old Painless at home.
Yeah, there's no assault cannon coming down that.
The hunting cabin is in a remote area. Given 12 hours, we can get your gear in place.
Amaniel's thin hand lightly touched Aaron's elbow, and he turned to look at her.
We will leave you and let you finish your preparations. Lelandriel, Aaron will contact you with the time and location of your departure.
All eyes watched as the ancient elves slowly walked through the door leading to the short hallway, leaving them alone with the creature.
So, when are we leaving?
Glide and Talisman looked at each other, then to the other members of the group. When they looked at Lily, she was shaking her head. Clearly, she wasn't keen on having the bizarre thing, Tommy, coming along. She opened her mouth, but was cut off by Frenzy.
All right, I hate Tommy as much as the rest of you, but have you seen the data he just supplied? All kinds of matrix security, and he's already been in there.
I think Tommy should come.
What are we going to do with a 12-year-old orc girl? How are we going to get you in there?
How are you going to help our party if you did go?
I mean, he was able to get out. I'm sure he can get back in.
I sidebar with Lily. I don't believe a fucking word of it. I don't believe any of it. I'll go with whatever you say, but I'm not comfortable with it.
I'm not really comfortable either with it, but Frenzy did make a good point.
Do you realize what you just said? You're going with what Frenzy's saying.
A sneer of disgust crossed Talisman's face as he leaned towards Tommy.
Tommy, you're not going.
Yeah,
I think you should.
I vote no.
If we're voting, I vote no, but it's not really up to a vote. I'm
telling you, if we don't have enough matrix on our side, we're going to be doing it plan Q.
Ah, plan Q. No one really knows where that term comes from. What is known is that the guy who made it famous was a raving lunatic. Let's just say that, according to plan Q, everything burns.
Can you still hack?
He's a technomancer now. He's going to have twice the ability. Put a deck in his hand.
Here's the thing you two keep forgetting. He is now a 12-year-old girl. We are a Shadowrun team. We cannot get from point A to point B with a 12-year-old girl.
Or, more importantly, we're a construction crew or a security detail.
That's what I mean. In right. disguise.
Tommy nodded in resignation and looked at Glide.
Your funeral, bro.
I've already been to yours. This is going to be the shittiest of the shit that we've ever done before. Guaranteed. So I just don't think we should leave something like this to chance. It's too dangerous.
All eyes turned to Tommy. It was clear that he was no longer welcome in the room. Exasperated, he threw his hands in the air and walked out the back door. Nightfall shook her head, following in his wake. Fastback watched her go after Tommy. Then he turned his attention to the task at hand.
The problem with a heist isn't getting in.
It's getting out.
Getting out.
Nightfall closed the door as she stepped into the alley behind the unfinished strip mall. Tommy leaned against the building's large green transformer box, heedless of the cold, steady rain. The Technomancer took a seat on the nearest parking block and looked up. To her, there was no denying it was Tommy.
You may or may not be aware that Technomancers see the world a bit differently than the rest of us. Nightfall always said that to her, the virtual world was reality, not vice versa. Like I mentioned before, she could interface the Matrix without the use of technology. What we see in AR using our augments or gadgets, digital skins covering everything, making them look pretty or flicker with advertising, she sees with her own eyes. Kinda like when an awakened person opens their astral awareness to see the hidden world, except she has to will herself not to see it. So to her, the living persona of Jenna Mayfair looked like Tommy.
Tommy turned and looked at her. There was no denying the look of profound sadness on his face.
Everyone in that room are fucking morons. Frenzy was right. You know what you were doing, Nightfall. But that host is buttoned up tight.
I was trying to get you in.
They don't understand. All they see is the meat suit. I can't get them out unless they trust me.
Meat suit's just a meat suit, man. I'm sure you're just as good at the skills that matter. Stupid that they're against you.
The real reason I'm here isn't for them. It's for you. He sent me for you.
You see?
Yes. I bathed in his glory and he spoke to me. He's ready for you.
I'm ready too. How was it?
Amazing. Pure love, knowledge. Voix was right. Usir did anoint me, but it wasn't until I used the Kador that, submerged, that I was able to touch him.
Kador really knew what he was doing when he came up with that technique.
He was a genius. Very soon, the cycle will turn again, and you can fulfill your destiny. But you will need my help. Do me a favor. Keep me connected to you while you're there.
Will do. What about Hestaby, man? You really working for her?
Fuck no.
That's what I thought I'd...
Don't trust her or her witch daughter.
Never would.
She's twisting shit all up, making it out like it's not her fault. It's all bullshit, man. Queen Elf Bitch is in their heads, especially Lily. Her story, the money, everything. Smoke and mirrors. Oh, no offense on the Elf Bitch stuff.
None taken. She is a bitch. She's the dragon's daughter.
Exactly.
Why does she think we're behind it?
Who the fuck knows? Plans within plans. It's all a fucking game.
So is she the one who's doing this?
Fuck Nightfall. Wake up. She's the one who kidnapped herself. Been pulling everyone's strings from the beginning.
I saw all the files on the host. They've been taking technomancers from Montreal.
United Rainier Petroleum. Fuck yeah, man. They've been trafficking from all over. You wouldn't believe how many vats are in that vault.
I mean, we've been working to bring him back, but not at that cost.
Right. They're trying the same shit Kobe did. Setting a trap. And just like before, we'll stick it right up their ass.
Lily opened her eyes and blinked as they instantly began to water. The pressure of the humidified oxygen in her mask was intense. She twisted her head in slight stretching motions, testing the fit of her headgear and mask without touching it with her hands. It had been 7 years since she'd been aboard a plane with the intent of jumping out of it. Some people, like Glyde, really took to skydiving. It was the adrenaline rush mostly. She concentrated on her breathing. It was important to stay focused during a halo. Especially with this halo. Unlike her previous jumps, this one didn't have the luxury of a failsafe. They had combed over the data they had been given. There was no way around it. The state-of-the-art sensors dotting Mount Shasta would pick up any Matrix signature, including an automated chute. Old-school ripcords and gigantic fucking balls. That's what Blockade said this jump needed. So she focused on her breathing because if she passed out, she was dead. She closed her eyes again and began visualizing the jump, step by step. Her headset popped, and the voice of the suborbital's pilot came through.
50 flight, stand by for ramp open. Delta Zulu, 2 minutes.
Copy, 2 minutes.
Ramp lowering. Leveling 30,000 feet. Heading 174. Be advised, 50 flight. Wind south, southeast, 18 knots. Gusting 23 knots.
Copy, 50. 18 gust, 23. Proceed, Delta Zulu count.
Roger that.
Eyes still closed. Lily stood when Fastback's hand touched her shoulder. She felt him tugging at her container. A tap on her headgear told her that she was mission ready. She opened her eyes and turned aft to face him. Returning the favor, she checked his pack. Eerie red light bathed the cargo bay, making their white tactical gear glow with a macabre haze. She tapped Fastback's helmet and rested her hand on his shoulder, listening to the pilot finalize the countdown.
4, 3, 2, 1, green light.
Every one of you has free fall of at least one. Free fall halo plus body, and your limit is your physical limit. 3 successes is what you need. But it is a diminishing damage based on successes. You are jumping from 30,000 feet. Main chute open at 1,250 feet. That only allows for a main chute, no backup. You're going to reach terminal velocity. So 0 successes, you take 200 P damage.
Nice.
1 success.
I love it.
50 P damage. 2 successes, 12 P damage. If you get all 3 successes, you still have to soak a 3 P damage. You can still be injured in a parachute drop even if you successfully make the drop.
Yeah. So 12 dice. I don't believe it. Not 1 success. I will edge that. 1, 2, 2.
2 was only 12 P damage.
I get 12 P damage. Now you're not wearing your armor.
8.
So you took 4 boxes of damage.
I'm going out next. I have 7 dice.
Glide going out next. Are you putting edge into it at the beginning or no?
That's 2 successes.
2 successes. Are you spinning an edge?
Yes. 3.
So you need to resist a 3 P damage. No armor.
Oh, fuck. 3 3 is a 1 and a 2.
So no successes.
No success.
You take 3 boxes of damage. Who's next?
Me. I throw 7 dice. I keep 7.
Dance yeah, with the devil.
5.
Wow.
Dang.
He's a fucking Halo master.
That was a gamble. Okay, so 3 P.
3 P.
3 successes.
You take nothing. Who's next?
I'll go. 4.
Take a 3 P.
Son of a whore.
1.
I got 1.
So you take 2 boxes of damage.
My turn.
There you go. 5.
I got 5 out of 6.
Bam.
This is a piece of cake.
3 P damage.
I'll take 3.
3 boxes of damage.
Cast levitate and jump out at force 4. 2.
Drain.
Need 4 successes. I got 4 successes.
Nightfall.
4 successes.
Resist 3 P.
With 3 dice.
Or
not
nothing.
A single success.
It's all right.
All right, 3 boxes.
3 P damage. Okay. Lily ripped the mask from her face and instantly regretted it. Lying on her back, she gasped, trying to calm herself and coax the air back into her lungs. Thin mountain atmosphere didn't help her situation. She'd hit the ground hard, a lot harder than she'd meant to. 23 knot winds. Bullshit. It took a minute, but her breath slowly returned. As she began to sit up and assess how far off course she'd been blown, the comm channel opened.
Team sound off.
Blockade on the ground and secure.
Astral glide, I twisted my ankle.
Lily on the ground and secure.
Talisman, good.
Friends, ready.
Nightfall, on the ground.
Secure the perimeter. Let's get out here.
Even without the help of electronic guidance, she'd done surprisingly well. Lily policed up her parachute and buried it, with its container, under the snow. Not before activating the corrosive charge built into it. By the time it was found, there'd be no way to identify what it was, much less who put it there. Instinctively, she cycled her cyber eyes to compensate for low light and picked up the form of Talisman trudging his way towards her. A silent hand gesture from her, and he turned and began moving east. She barely heard the hissing of the dissolving gear behind her as she made her way after him, to their rally point, the hunting cabin. 200 meters through knee-high crusted snow brought her within visual contact of their destination. when Blockade's voice popped into the comm.
Room secure. Safe to come in.
Lily and Talisman entered the cold, dark cabin, taking notice that they were the last to arrive. Fastback nodded to her as he turned his attention back to the group.
Damage assessment.
My ankle hurts, man.
Slight damage.
Tweaked it.
Lily, you have a limp?
Minimal, yeah.
I took a pretty good shot, but I'll survive.
All right.
While nobody's looking, I'm going to heal myself.
Glide and Talisman began ministration of the wounded as Blockade and Fastback pulled back the floor cover to reveal a trap door. Aaron had assured them that the equipment they requested, as well as their cover identities, would all be there waiting for them. An agonizing moment of tension was broken as the massive troll began pulling gear bags out of the hidden space. She took one of the bags and opened it to reveal an expertly stowed security uniform, complete with ID badge, classifying the wearer as a captain, and bearing a less than flattering picture of Glide. She threw the kit bag at Glide's feet and noticed the rest of them donning their cover paraphernalia. Lily picked up the last unopened pack and found a set matching Glide's, but obviously sized for her. By the time she had buttoned up the white greatcoat and put on her visored leather hat, the others were dressed and ready. Blockade, Glide, and herself were dressed as SK Prime, Seder Krupp Special Forces, while Talisman, Frenzy, Nightfall, and Fastback were garbed in Krupp Specialist Engineering coveralls. A strange look crossed Glide's face that initially worried her until he tapped his ear, indicating that she should turn on her hat's built-in comm. She extended the earpiece, slid it in place, and smiled.
You're hearing the comm chatter of all the security guards.
You find out when the monorail is actually moving, how often, what its schedule is, because that's how we're going to get to the mountaintop.
Nightfall turned her eyes from Glide and looked as if she were drifting into a daydream. Though she hadn't fully extended her awareness into the digital landscape of the Matrix, she was still able to communicate with her registered sprites. Lily knew that the Technomancer was tasking one of them to retrieve the data they needed. Problem with that was the risk. For Mother's tale was true, and this was some plot of a Technomancer death cult, they would recognize Nightfall's sprite for what it was, and know that she was poking around. Lily took a slow step in Nightfall's direction when the Technomancer looked at her with detached indifference.
Fuzzy Bum says the monorail goes up 2 hours and comes down every 2 hours.
Okay, so when does it go again?
It'll be in the village at midnight.
So we've got 2 hours.
Lily blinked as her AR desktop winked on. The topographic map of Mount Shasta appeared. They were approximately 4 kilometers upslope from a lone road that led to the village. A winking red dot indicated the location of a security checkpoint where the road intersected with I-5. She was just about to suggest a ploy to get them past it when she looked at Blockade. He was staring straight at her and seemed to be reading her mind. He slowly shook his thick bull head. She turned her attention to the nearby woods and the fence line.
Using the headsets, you can circumvent a lot of the patrols and things like that. You can kind of triangulate where they are if you roll a successful security procedures.
8 dice, keep 5. 3 successes, 4 successes.
Blockade pointed his meaty AR-gloved hand, indicating a particularly lonely stretch of the fence line and the single guard tower protecting it.
All right, the plan is we're going to skirt this line right here. We're going to go along this guard tower. When we get up close to the guard tower, you two need to bullshit that tower and get us by it.
Can I see the layout of the property?
Yeah, here it is.
I'll try and identify like a power box or something that would be maybe in the woods that would make sense for a construction crew to have gone to work on. Maybe having come from it or we're going to it, and that's why we're walking by the guard tower.
Glide stood with a fine, manicured hand on his chin, squinting at the display that they all shared. Lily could see the wheels turning in his head. He wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed, but he knew how to pull off a scam. An area in the woods, 4 or 5 clicks north of the hunting cabin, was highlighted in yellow. A communication relay tower. It was an overly big or important looking one, likely used for short range radio.
Plan a work order for us to work on Comm Tower 6A.
Nightfall nodded, and the glazed look quickly returned to her eyes. Blockade casually inspected the heavy-barreled assault cannon in his hands. Aaron had promised to have them fully equipped for the mission, and he didn't disappoint. The massive troll shouldered the sleek Panther XXL and opened the outer door to the cold. Without protest or comment, the rest filed out after him. Fastback lightly nudged Nightfall to get her moving before following them. A 30-minute hump got them to the border of the woods, within sight of the guard tower. Ensuring that she was still in deep cover of the trees, Lily crouched into a sling-supported firing position and scanned the tower through her imaging scope. She counted two external sentries, standing beside an idling six-wheeled APC. Inside the tower, she couldn't tell. It had reflective windows and was protected by thermal dampening. She relayed her findings to blockade with a series of hand gestures, and then turned her attention back to the tower. A hand on her shoulder told her it was time to move out. Glide's eyes met hers. Time was wasting. They were going to have to make their move. They stepped out into the clearing and was joined by the rest of the team. Glide looked sideways at Nightfall.
How's it coming with that work order?
Let me check in.
Her eyes glazed over and almost instantly she smiled and, eyes clear, looked at him.
Just finished.
Cool.
And just as you say that, a light goes right onto your position from the guard tower. Two guards at the bottom of the tower, they start moving towards you, hands resting on their weapons. None of them have their fingers in the triggers, but they don't necessarily need that.
The white fatigues of the external sentries made it hard to see them, all but their mirrored face shields, which glimmered wetly in the gloom at the edge of the focused light, blended into the surrounding snow. It caused an eerie effect of glowing disembodied heads lurking just outside the safety of the light. The guard entered the harsh spotlight. His hands held his assault rifle in a barrel-down posture, non-threatening, but easily changed should force be needed. The young man's voice, modulated by the helmet, sounded heavily accented. Eastern European, Bosnian, or maybe Russian.
Halt. Now, slowly advance to be recognized.
Glide took a step forward, hands held out to the sides, palms towards the jittery guard. The sentry's weapon rose, butt pressed into his shoulder, though the barrel was still down, and his finger was pointed outside the trigger guard. Glide stopped. They stared at each other. The trooper, no doubt, scanned Glide's pan, verifying the validity of the RFID tags laced in his uniform and gear.
We didn't have any registered patrols or maintenance crews on the roster for today. Please explain your presence, sir.
We just escorted this crew to the communication relay at 681138.
Wait one.
Lily held her breath. Painfully long seconds passed as everyone stood as still as marble statues. She could faintly hear the automated defenses of the tower tracking them. Then the masked guard's head cocked slightly to one side and the grip on his rifle relaxed.
Yes, sir. That checks out. I apologize for any inconvenience, Captain.
Excellent work, Trooper.
Thank you, sir. If you don't mind me asking, sir, you encounter any critters out there?
You can hear them. Didn't see anything, though. We only heard him because they wanted us to. I'm commandeering your security vehicle. My lieutenant has twisted her ankle.
I'm, like, leaning on him. 16 dice. I only got 3 successes. Huh? So you get 3 dice.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Good roll.
So what's your social limit?
I can keep 9, and I got 10.
So you net, right. You got 9. Net 4.
The trooper's mirrored face shield turned to Lily, and he took a slow step towards her, then halted.
Oh, yes, sir, of course. Let me fetch my medkit from the tower. It's fully stocked.
Excellent. I'll send crews back with your vehicle when we're done.
Yes, sir.
A low rumbling chuckle bubbled from blockade as the guard hurried to the tower and quickly returned with a bulging med pack and a metal thermos.
Here you are. And ma'am, I put a thermos of hot soup in there for you. Hope you feel better.
Fastback stepped to the front of the armored vehicle and climbed into the driver's hole, while the rest piled into the back hatch. Glide's nose wrinkled at the bizarre combination of smells that always accompanied an APC in the field. Musty, stale sweat, hydraulic fluid, and diesel fuel. At least it was warm inside. He settled into one of the molded seats affixed to the side and rested his eyes to avoid the inevitable motion sickness that he got from being in a buttoned off-road transport. The quick ride to town was surprisingly smooth, and Glide was a bit disappointed that the warm trip was over. All they had to do was lay low for a while and get some details hashed out before making their move.
I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to go to a location and kill some time, and maybe Nightfall can get a lay of land here.
Through an open side portal, Glyde saw that they had pulled up to a 3-story building, the hotel that they had designated to use as a staging area. Fastback cut the engine and opened the back ramp, allowing them to casually walk out and make their way to the hotel's first floor restaurant. Glyde nearly bumped into Frenzy, who had stopped short when he entered the front door. The reason for the mage's reaction became clear as he finally looked around the dining area. Uniformed security guards sat at virtually every table. It seemed that their staging area was a popular hangout for Seder Group security officers. As casually as they could muster, they wound their way through the crowded dining room and took seats at the last open tables. Talisman caught Glyde's attention as they settled in and began to peruse their menus.
Let's not fight anybody.
I was going to send out some sprites, just matrix surveillance.
Glyde sipped his coffee and watched the crowd, listening to Nightfall and Talisman pretend to small talk. It wasn't going well. The Technomancer was prattling on about something, using so much rapid-fire net speak that she was hard to comprehend. Talisman, an expert in projecting feigned interest, was countering with mage talk. The effect was a jumbled mess that made Glyde's head hurt. His eyes wandered to the table where Lily sat. She was effortlessly chatting up Frenzy, who looked as uncomfortable as a wet cat.
Make a perception check.
2.
Glyde turned his attention back to his own table. Ignoring the multilingual bullshit that was being spewed by his teammates, he lifted the insulated coffee pot and poured himself another cup. The rich aroma hit him, and he nodded. It was a fine dark roast. He was just about to comment to his brother that he should give it a try, when he was struck mute by a detail he failed to notice before. Attached to the concave underside of the coffee pot was something white. His initial thought was that the pot had a slight leak or had gotten wet and adhered to a piece of a paper napkin. It wasn't. Affixed with a gooey spot of adhesive was a folded note. He discreetly palmed the paper and sat back, keeping it under the table to hide its presence from his companions, who were wrapped in their gibberish word game. Plucking the wad of adhesive from it, he slowly rolled it between his fingers. Even from where it was held, he could detect the faint odor of mint. It was gum. He silently thanked God it wasn't a booger or some other bodily excretion. Without looking, he opened it, then leaned back in his chair and glanced down. It merely read 2C. Frowning, nonplussed, he tried to picture their server in his head. Damn, he couldn't remember what she looked like, or even if they were a she. Without reservation, he shrugged and stood, turning sideways to fit between the cramped tables. He started to walk towards the wide staircase in the lobby when Talisman's hand caught his arm.
Clyde, where are you going?
As I go by my brother, I'll just kind of slap him on the chest and leave the note, like, in his pocket. Hey, I'll be right back.
He took the steps 2 at a time and swiftly walked down the deserted hallway, sidestepping trays of dead food on his way to room 2C. As he approached it, the angle of the door was off, intentionally left ajar with the silvery female half of the slide latch poking through the crack. Glyde slowly ran his hand along the lacquered door, gently pressing as it slid down, causing the door to slowly creep open, delaying the identity of the mystery person. Delicious anticipation. When the door opened fully, he wasn't disappointed by the form lounging on the bed. Still in her work uniform, she looked back at him. Her eyes gleamed with approval. She didn't have the detached look of a pro, so he figured that she was a local girl who probably acted on a moment of bold desire, which suited him just fine. He stepped in and closed the door. As he slowly walked towards her, something in her demeanor made him stop. They weren't alone.
Make another perception check.
Okay. 3.
Glyde smiled and turned. Leaning against the open bathroom door was a familiar figure.
Glyde.
Apex. I was wondering when I'd see you again.
Apex nodded curtly to the girl on the bed. She quickly rose, gathered her things, bundling them under her arm, and hurried from the room.
How's it going, brother?
Everything's in place.
What's the plan?
I took care of everything. The timetable's good. His chopper arrived 4 hours ago. Did she tell you that Harlequin was captured?
Yeah.
A lie. It's not Harlequin. He's dressed like Harlequin, but it's not him.
So where's Harlequin?
Who the fuck knows?
Well, that's not the only reason we're here, but that's one of the reasons we're here.
God damn it, Matt. Aren't you listening? has to be Sin an imposter. Sid or Krupp thinks it's Harley Quinn. When they figure out it's not him, that guy's good as dead. Brockhaus is grilling him now. He won't hold up much longer. Once he cracks, our opportunity dries up. Brockhaus leaves. Like I said, it's all set up. All I need is one of the girls.
Sounds good to me. So which one?
One that can pull off being a personal assistant, as well as act as a bodyguard.
Definitely I'll be Lily, though.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. Nightfall on the inside would be helpful, but Lily's better suited to the role.
Okay, give me just a sec.
Once she's in place, I have a way to get the rest inside. You're gonna have to stall them.
We can do that. That's not a problem. Hold on, give me just a second. I'll send her a text message. Come up to 2C. Party.
Glide frowned at the long string of expletives that scrolled across the chat window he shared with Lily.
JK's, come up now.
Brockhouse's chopper is unregistered, but I doctored the flight schedule. Buried, but Nightfall should find it easy enough. It says that there'll be a personnel chopper coming in at 0530. Let them think that that is the exit strategy. This should go without saying, but it's probably best the others don't know about me yet.
That's why I'm just bringing her up.
Honestly, man, I'm surprised you haven't told her yet.
Fuck no, I didn't tell her. That was the plan, man. 10 years we've been working on this shit. 10 fucking years. You think I'm gonna blow it by telling somebody? Hold on. Let me get my pants back on.
Open the fucking door, Glide.
All right, keep your shirt on for a second anyway. Hold on. Come on in. There's an old friend here to see you. I shut the door. Lock it.
I don't have time for your games.
Lily, it's been a long time.
Glide, you better fucking explain this to me right now.
What is there to explain? How is it these guys haven't figured this out yet, Apex? Does this make any sense?
Do not fucking condescend me. You need to tell me right now why the fuck I shouldn't alert the team and let them fucking kill you. Because I'm getting tired of your bullshit. All you ever do is lie.
Settled? Hold on, that's not true. That is not true. What I meant by how you guys haven't figured it out yet was, 10 years ago, the job went bad, right?
I think that's pretty damn obvious.
Okay, Apex and I figured out before the job that we were all being set up. Okay? I said I had somebody on the inside.
We were together.
Listen, I have to explain this to you. I've kept this a secret for 10 years. There's a reason I've kept it a secret for 10 years. If I'd let any of this stuff out, everything would have fallen apart. For 10 years, Apex has been on the inside. He's the guy that I was telling you that I had on the inside, okay? Apex figured out before the job that we were all being set up.
Lily's rage-filled eyes never left Glide's. She stared at him with barely restrained hate, trembling, aching to draw the sharp cougar fine blade from her boot and shove it into his eye, repeatedly, end his bullshit once and for all. But she didn't. She couldn't. That sudden realization was like a colossal weight bearing down on her. She sat on the bed and lowered her head into her hands as Glide continued.
Apex knew that Tommy was in deep with these guys, and he tried to tell me, and I didn't listen to him, and he was right, okay? Now, you ran with Apex, you ran with me.
And you both...
Hold on, let me finish. You ran with both of us. You know how good I was. You know how good Apex is. Don't you think that if Apex had the drop on me while I'm carrying my brother, that he would have easily killed me?
I don't think I know anything about either of you except that you're a fucking liar.
Lily, listen.
Okay, I'm not gonna believe anything you say, but tell me why he's here and what you want from me.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Cut the bullshit and just tell me what you know.
Come on, lay it on her.
Sader Krupp was behind it all. Everything. The Humanist job was all orchestrated at the highest level of SK. Specifically, a man named Hans Brockhaus. Lofweir's number one. He's here, Lily. Right now. Lofweir sent him to oversee the final stages of Project Heimlichfort. The opening of the Indomino.
Tell her what she's got to do.
I've set it up so that you can get close to him. Really close.
And how'd you do that?
We don't need to get into that right now.
That's what I thought.
We really don't have time for all these details. He's
I'm not talking to you right now, Glide. Let me talk to Apex.
You are to act as the personal liaison to Mr. Brockhaus. The identity I got you has a good enough pedigree. He'll want to keep you close.
Brockhaus is to interrogate Harlequin. So this does fulfill our objective.
And
it also gives us an avenue of escape, the helicopter. We'll use the helicopter to get off the mountain.
Look, I'll do it, but I assume you want me to lie to the group again.
Actually, Glide will handle that. You're leaving with me. Right now.
Thank you for listening. We hope you have enjoyed this episode of The Dragon Variation. Theme music by Dot Sound. Background music by Machinima Sound. Written, produced, and directed by Eric Austin. Openly Gamer Theater would like to thank Catalyst Game Labs for allowing us to make this production. Any commercial use of this production is prohibited. Shadowrun is copyrighted property of the Topps Company. Openly Gamer Theater is trademark property of Side Tangent Productions.